Thank you. My name is Waleed, and I'm an addict. And I'd like to thank my higher power for allowing me to be here today. You know, left up to my own devices, I don't know where I would be. Okay. One thing I'm going to tell you briefly. One of my favorite pieces of literature is Just for Today. So I'm going to share with you out of that piece of Narcotics Anonymous approved literature. And that's basically how I was taught to live my life. And I'm going to share a little bit about how I got here and mostly about how I live life on life terms today. It's a daily program for me. And it always introduces new challenges every day. Okay, so today is April the 14th. It says a new vision. Do we really want to be rid of our resentments, our anger, our fear? And this is from Basis Text, page 33. Why do we call them shortcomings? Perhaps they should be called long goings. Because that's often what it takes for them to fade from our lives. Some of us feel that our shortcomings are the very characteristics that saved our lives when we used. If this is true, then it is little wonder that we sometimes cling to them like old dear friends. If we are having trouble with resentment, anger, or fear, we may want to envision what our lives could be like without these troubling defects. Asking ourselves why we react in a certain manner could sometimes root out the fear at the core of our conduct. Why am I afraid to step beyond these aspects of my personality? We ask ourselves, am I afraid of who I will be without these attributes? Once we have uncovered our fear, we are able to move beyond it. We try to imagine what our lives could be like without them. Without some of our more glaring shortcomings. This gives us a feeling for what lies past our fear, providing the motivation we need to push through it. Our higher power offers us a new vision for our lives, free of our defects. That vision is the essence of our own best, brightest dreams for ourselves. We need not fear that vision. Just for today, I will imagine that my life would be what my life would be like without my character defects. I will ask for the willingness to have God remove my shortcomings. And each and every day, there's a new piece of information that I incorporate into my life that helps me to get through the day. And I'm a byproduct of New Jersey. I'd like to give also welcome to my brother Farrakhan, that I have the privilege of sharing the podium with today. And it just so I've got my high power habit, he's from New Jersey, and I'm also a native of New Jersey. And I grew up in the slums of Newark and in the projects, and using was a way of life. Using, crime, all those things was natural. I did not even know that it was something wrong with using until I was a grown man. But I always wanted to escape my reality. You know, I always did. My mother moved around a lot. I thought she was just like a gypsy. But later in life, I found out we used to get evicted a lot. So, and we weren't moving because we wanted to. So I had to reintroduce myself into a lot of different environments. So I was like a chameleon. It didn't matter where you put me. I also lived in New York on 118th and Morningside. So my mother didn't have a geographical area where she moved. So anyway, I sold drugs from the time I was 11. I've been using probably since I've been drinking since I could pick up a cup. And they probably put it in my baby bottle anyway. So I've been addicted all my life. So my problem started way before I found out I had a problem with smoking coke. So in my attempt to leave my condition, because I thought it was as simple as that, I joined the military. First of all, I didn't graduate high school because once we went to the prom, you know, of course, I was high as hell, I was clean. And once the prom was over, I didn't find it necessary to go back to school. So I didn't take no final exams since I did not graduate. So 2 years later, it dawned on me, because I was hustling, life was good. I really didn't need no diploma. But it dawned on me that I needed a diploma to get into the Army. So I was going to escape by way of the United States Army. And I thought, well, when I join the Army, they're going to send me on the other side of the world. And I did that, and I was waiting for them to tap me on my shoulder and say, Mr. Williams, because I had a record this long before I even turned 18. So anyway, they let me in, and instead of sending me on the other side of the world, they sent me to Fort Dix. You know, people that don't know, that's right down the road, 95, exit 7A, right by, Great Adventures. And I'm going to tell you, it was an adventure. That was the beginning of my adventure into a new life. And the funny thing is, once I made it through basic training, I barely made it through because I was smoking weed, drinking wine, and all that in basic training. I laughed at everybody, thought everything was funny. I could not get that cool pimp out of my walk. They wanted me to march, and I was pimping. And it was a struggle. You know, they said, that damn Jersey boy. And I thought, well, once you get past basic training, you know, my family came, and we celebrated, I marched, and first time I ever graduated, finished anything. And my family, the way they are, they brought champagne, coke, weed, on to the military base. And instead of shipping out, I stayed. My AIT, which is the next level, I stayed right at Fort Dix again. And I walk into the room, feel like this with other people that's in the military, coming out of basic training. But except for my eyes was bloodshot red. I'm fucked up from coming out the car with my family. And I'm late. So I'm walking, everybody looking at me. So, but anyway, I made it through there. And this time, they finally gonna send me far away. They sent me to Fort Bragg. All these places is within driving distance of all the stuff I love. It wasn't long before I wouldn't even cash my little check. I was going home, getting packages, bringing it back, hustling. And still when I was in training. And so you know what happened when I went to Fort Bragg. It was on. Okay? We had a place called Stab and Jab. You know. And so anyway, my disease accompanied me everywhere I went. And, you know, I stayed in trouble. Stayed fighting, stayed hustling, and eventually, towards the end of that time, I was there from 82 to 85, and at the end, before I went to Germany, I sold some a package to CID, which is undercover police. And once I recognized that I had done that, you know, the things came into my head, because they were trying to set me up to sell them more, so, you know, I'm plotting, I could kill them. You know, that seemed like the most reasonable thing to do. But what I did was, I did what I normally do. I disappeared. I told you I was Houdini. So I disappeared, and I reappeared in Germany. And the funny thing about Germany, they didn't have no coke. I was selling mescaline coke. I would probably consume about 5 different drugs in my body, along with all the alcohol I could consume, all at the same time. And I jumped out of planes. So, and I would volunteer to go to the front and stand in the door. Right? And, so in Germany, they didn't have that. And once you remove all the chemicals, the mescaline, the coke, and all that stuff, and you consume the same amount of alcohol, guess what? You'd be a fall-down drunk. And that's what happened. I was in Germany, driving on the Autobahn, 110, 120 miles an hour. You know, I would be obliterated. I couldn't even, a lot of times I would come out the club, wouldn't even defog my windows. It'd be a blizzard. You know, I mean, it's amazing. And when they court-martialed me in 87, they court-martialed me in Nyom, Germany in 87 for selling the drugs in 85 in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, United States of America. I thought that was some real unfair crap. 2 years later, I'm like, what happened to statute of limitation? Something. Military don't play like that. So they had 2 30-year sentences for me. And so, you know, it ain't take long for me to cop. Took one of them quick plea bargains. And they sent me to Fort Bragg, and Fort Riley, Kansas. I just missed Leavenworth, and they had this yellow brick road down there, and that'll come back into play in my recovery. But what they did was, I thought it was a bad thing, but they had actually rescued me from me. My disease was surely going to kill me, because I stayed in fights. I mean, I would tear the whole bar up. I ain't but this big. And they'd be like, when the police eye come and get me, they'd be like, this one little motherfucker. Tear the whole joint up, busted people in the head with mugs, bar stools, everything. So I was a menace. So what my high power did was he made it possible for me to get some help by way of Mannheim, Germany prison. And they shipped me back over like Hannibal. And in Fort Riley, it was some dudes in there, and they was praying. And that was my first introduction to prayer because I was a atheist. You know, I didn't believe in nothing but me. I really said on my dog tags was no preference. You know, we can use whoever you want to use. And that would follow me into recovery also. And so what happened for me is after I got out, I had a wife. Instead of preparing for my wife for me going to jail, I had a going to jail party. And just show you how messed up my thinking was. You understand? I didn't have the ability to deal with reality. And so anyway, once I finally did my little 10 months and I went back to Newark. Now, I had been in North Carolina for 3 years, Germany for 2 years. When I got back to Newark, they was about 6 speeds ahead of me. You understand? I'm used to giving out drugs on credit. And coming to collect, you know, we get paid every 2 weeks in the military. So they weren't playing like that. I was giving it out, and they weren't bringing it back. So, and at the end, towards the end of my addiction, I lived in 611 High Street. Most people, they know anything about Newark, on High and West Kinney. It was 21 floors of pure madness. It was somewhere, it was on each floor, it went from A to Z. So it was like almost 24 apartments on each floor. I know it's 26 letters in the alphabet, but they skipped a couple. I know somebody was listening. Thank you very much, my brother. I appreciate that. You got to be cognizant of what's going on. But at the end, my wife had left, took my daughter. My daughter was born while I was in prison. And at the end, I was up there. I lived with my mother. My mother had about a couple years in recovery, and she used to say to me, "Aren't you tired?" And I come in from 3 days of Ben's, my eyes like this. I'm like, "No, I ain't tired. What the fuck you asking me that for? You see how wide open my eyes is?" But at the end, I was in that 20, I lived in 21D. I was in that apartment on Thanksgiving Day, 1988. No turkey smell. I was all alone. And I felt like the Omega Man. For y'all that's old enough to know, the Omega Man was a 1972 movie with Charlton Heston. He was the last man on earth. And I'm basically here today as a result of that feeling. Because I still had money in my pocket. Shit was really not that bad. I've been in way, way worse shit than that. You understand? I done pulled myself up from the most unimaginable thing. So that was nothing. But that feeling, for some reason, on this day, that year, that feeling had penetrated me. From a no-feeling human being, that feeling had penetrated me. And I knew my brother was down here in Maryland, and he had about 5 years clean. And I never really had no reason to rap to him since he stopped shooting dope, because what the fuck do I talk about to somebody that don't use? What are we going to talk about? I love you. Yeah, all right. And I give him some money. He's 7 years older than me, but I give him some money because I always kept money. But anyway, I came down. He took me to a meeting over at St. Luke's on a Monday night. I heard a guy share, by the grace of God, he's still here, just celebrated 30 years, and he shared his story. I was 26 years old. He must have been about 30-something at that time, and his story wasn't nothing like mine. Nothing. I mean, he'd been through hell. If I'd been through what he went through, I'd have quit, too. But what I did attach myself to was the feelings that he shared that was at the end of his road. The feelings were similar to me being alone in that apartment on that day. And that held me. That gave me the identification that I believed his story. I didn't think he was making it up. I believed him. And I believed that he said that this program had helped him and his life had gotten better. I saw the evidence because he was right in front of me. And from that day on to this day, I've been coming back ever since. Non-interrupted since 1988. I got 6,700. They told me this yesterday. Got a lot of damn days. That's a lot of damn days. You understand? I ain't know I had that many days. I'm like, damn. That's a lot of days. But you know what's my inspiration? Is my sponsor got over 1,000 days more than me. And it's a lot of other people in my area that has much more days than me. So I ain't never got to get confused about arriving because I've got physical evidence that you never arrive. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, it was at points in my recovery where I really thought I knew more than them. I probably did. But that's not really what counts. Because no matter what I know today, If I cannot deal with what life presents me, life on life terms today, all I know will not help me. Because life don't work like that. Life ain't based off of all the experience you had over the last 18 years, Wally. Life is based off of the experience that you're going to input into this situation today. See, so I struggle not with the history of my past. My past don't haunt me. It's my present. My present that haunts me. See what I'm saying? I'm in a life. I have a living story. I don't have a story. I very seldom even tell my story because my story is really not relevant to where I am today. But the program says, tell your story. See, because I have an evolving story. I can tell you something different every day of the week because life presents itself differently every day of the week to me. So I remember when I first got here, my brother gave me a basic text and he wrote in there, if it is to be, it is up to me. It said 10 two-letter words never to forget. If it is to be, it is up to me. Those who forget are destined to repeat. So it had never been cloudy to me who this was about, who was responsible for it. So it is me that's responsible for my recovery. You know, so no matter what anybody do, I hear people talk about the program and, you know, the people in the program. I really don't give a damn about what the people in the program do. Now, I would rather people in here don't sleep with my wife, but they do. You understand? I'd rather they not talk about me, but they do. But that does not determine my level of recovery. It does not determine my level of spirituality. What they do is they give me the ability to practice my level of acceptance, my level of powerlessness, my level of compassion for a person that don't know how to have the ability to do anything different. See, and that's where the tolerance come in, because somebody had to be tolerant of me. I remember I've been coming here ever since we've been in Ocean City. And I don't want to come half the time. How the hell I wind up here, I do not know. It is a habit. So it is one of the positive habits. See, I'm a creature of habit. I do everything habitually. Just to show you, man, that, ain't nothing really out of order, because what I've learned to do as a result of coming here is I learned to go to meetings. You know what I mean? I learned to have a higher power. I told you I didn't have when I came here. I learned that. You know, I learned to help somebody else opposed to helping myself, because the only person I knew was myself when I came in here. So I ain't coming here with nobody. Nobody planned nothing. I didn't even know. I only knew one person in the whole damn state. So, you know, but that ain't never scared me before. You know, I'll go into anywhere. You know what I mean? Weaponless. Like, I've been there all the time. So, y'all told me y'all would love me till I learned to love myself. And that's what I've been carrying. They said they would help me till I learned to help myself. And I would ask people, where you going? So, if you knew and you having trouble plugging in, practice walking up to people and say, hi, my name is Wally. Where you going? What y'all doing? Me too. You know, so I ain't never had that excuse. Oh, they ain't friendly enough. I don't give a fuck about y'all. What the hell I care whether you friendly or not? I go up to the meanest looking motherfucker. What's up? You know, so that's just how I am. So this place is perfect for me. I plug right in. And I still plug right in. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I suggest to other people, man. Plug in. Pull up on people. Introduce yourself. You have to introduce yourself at least 10 times, especially if you're dealing with an addict like me, because I have a horrible memory. If I don't say your name often, I will forget it. Nothing personal. So let me just show you where I am today. You know, I got a dishonorable discharge as a result of my court-martial from the United States Army. And they told me, well, you can't succeed with that. Well, that's what they've been telling me all my life. So, of course, that didn't mean nothing to me. So I went back to Jersey. I got a job with state of New Jersey, working at University of Medicine and Dentistry. And then my wife couldn't get no gig, so guess what? I went and got another one. Down to Star Ledger, one of the best. So I had two very good jobs, but this is the person they told wouldn't succeed as a result of the dishonorable discharge. So, you know, And but I, you know, when they told me at one of the jobs, they said, you know, my real name is Benny. Some of y'all know my name is Benny, plus Ricky. Some of them call me Ricky. So they said, Benny, you're real good when you're here, man. We love you. You're real good when you're here. You just ain't here often enough. You know, because my disease, see, I always been able to use, hustle, and work. All of them was part of the habit that I had transformed in my life. So that's when the evidence came. When I could stop when I wanted to stop, when I couldn't make it the way I wanted to be, when I wanted to be there, that's when I gave it was an inkling that it might be possible that we got a little problem here. See, and that was enough that I knew I needed to do something different. And that's the kind of person I am. I'm going to make some changes based off of my condition. So that's what got me here. And since being here, they've embraced me in D.C. like nobody's business. I'm telling you, it is from a non-loving person. They have taught me how to love. Sometimes I'm still angry with them because as a result of loving so much, I've been married two and a half more times than when I got here. That's a whole nother story. And so I'm going to get to that. I just want to stay on track. I got about 10 more minutes, I think. And and I did a lot of jobs. I was a cook coming out of the military. I did a lot of jobs. I worked real hard. And my brother happened to be in a hospital at the VA. And they had a job on the board for a cook foreman. Now, my disease say, first of all, my intellect say, well, what the fuck, let's apply for that. My disease say, ain't no need to apply for that because you know you got dishonorable discharge. You can't possibly get that job. There's no need to waste our time. That's what my disease say. But my intellect say, fuck your disease. Fill it out anyway. What's the worst? See, one of the good things about me, the worst thing that happened when I ask somebody anything is that they could tell me no. It's the worst scenario. So that fear, talked about that fear I'm able to overcome because I'm just going to do it. You know, sometimes that doing a thing get me in trouble, but and lo and behold, after I forgot about it, went and got a different job. I was working at Chuck E. Cheese. I was a Chuck E. Cheese manager. I went to Chuck E. Cheese University. You talking about some humbling thing? They made me take a picture with the Chuck E. Cheese, the mouse uniform and everything. I still got that joint too. That's right. I got some pictures throughout my life that you'd be like, whoa, wait. Boy, I had it rough. And but, you know, as God would have it, man, I got that job, and that was 14 years ago. I'm still there. I'm a GS-13 in the United States government. And actually, some people that work with me and for me are in this room right now. You know, and we have a lot of recovering addicts. It's really like my calling with my higher power placed me to help other addicts and just other people in general. It's like a counseling. It's like a treatment center for real. You know what I'm saying? So I've been blessed beyond words, you know what I mean? Recovery has just been like that for me. Everything that I thought could possibly be possible, it succeeded that. You know, I'm going to read this real quick because I've been struggling. I've always struggled since I've been here, let me say that. At 3 years, I knew just about all the literature backwards and forwards. I had done a series of steps. I was in service, knew the traditions better than most people. A lot of people weren't even into the traditions back then. But I came up in a tradition, a step in a tradition meeting. From my first week clean all the way up to 10 years, I went to the same step in the tradition meeting every week. Now, I'm very something that I miss and meeting. And so I've been struggling with letting go. And this, I don't even know where I picked it up from. It says, higher power, help me to understand. To let go do not mean to stop caring. It means I can't do it for someone else. It says, higher power, help me to understand. To let go is not to enable, but to allow learning from natural consequences. Higher power, help me understand. To let go is to admit powerlessness, which means the outcome is not up to me. Higher power, help me to understand. To let go is not to try to change or blame another. It's to make the most of myself. Higher power, help me to understand. To let go is not to care, but to care about. Higher power, help me to understand. To let go is not to fix, but to be supportive. Higher power, help me to understand. To let go is not to judge, but to allow another to be a human being. To let go is not to perfect, to protect. It is to permit another to face reality. To let go is not to deny, but to accept. To let go is not to scold or argue, but instead to search about my own shortcomings and correct them. To let go is not to adjust everything to my desire, but take each and every day as it comes and cherish myself in it. And I have that hanging on my mirror so I can see it every day. Now, I wish I could say I was a fast learner, but I constantly, and I've been practicing this for almost a year now. A couple years ago, at 3 years clean, I used to judge everybody. And anytime you did something, especially if you was a good recovering addict, I'd be like, how in the hell could he do that with all them years clean? You know what I mean? I thought he had a program. You know, y'all don't know what I'm talking about, do you? And what happened was, they said you get your turn. Well, I had 3 years clean. I had called myself, I was practicing Islam at the time, and things was wonderful, and I called myself helping another human being. A young lady that I knew in the program was pregnant, and her man was locked up, and she said he was just a donor anyway, so I figured I would help her, because I was locked up when my daughter was born, and I thought that it was that God had just placed me there. You know what I'm saying? I give God all the credit, especially when stuff that want to go my way. And, you know, so I justified the most outrageous nonsense. I don't know if I told y'all that yet, but I'll do that. And so I arranged for me to, you know, I went to Le Mans with her. And by the 9th month, we was in a relationship. And we had the baby. We got a little house, a little place, and everything was wonderful. We was a recovery couple. And then she didn't do the stuff that I thought she should do. She wasn't home enough with the baby. You know how it goes. And my old girlfriend that I had for her, you know, she was conveniently available, and so I was doing that every chance I could get. And after a while, one day, because I would just meet her, you know, she'd say, "What you doing?" I said, "Nothing. What you want to do?" You know, whatever she wanted to do, that's what we did. And we would go eat lunch, go to the hotel, whatever. And this day, I said, "What you want to do?" She said, "I want to get married." I said, "All right." 3 years clean. She had about 3 or 4. And we went to the Justice of Peace and got married. Now, I was living with the other lady. Some of the people already know this story. It ain't that bad, but you got to all go in on. It's some fucked up shit. That's what it was. And I went back to Jersey right after I married her and told my mother, because I tell my mother everything. And she said, "That's some fucked up shit. You no good. Go back and get out that apartment. Why'd you do that? Man, I couldn't believe she acted like that. I was blown. I'll tell you, I was crushed. Because my mother usually, she down for the get down. You know, I'm telling you, I got a real Jersey girl mama. And, you know, she was like, "Ew, nigga." I was messed up. I was all happy when I told her I was messed up. So I had to come back and try to fix that joint. I ain't realized what I had done. It's amazing how, and I don't know if you can relate to that. Man, I can do some stuff sometime, and I don't realize what the hell I done, man. I had no idea the devastation that I was creating. But I had to come back and deal with life on life terms. That this is what it is, Wally. This is what happened. And you know, I couldn't explain how it happened. It didn't make no sense to me either. So anyway, man, I had to deal with the emotions of that sister, and I had to come into the rooms. People was talking. You know, I wanted to bring my bat. You know what I mean? Motherfuckers need to mind their business. You know, I got real angry over something I did. So anyway, we fixed it. You know, I got annulment. That's why I count that as the half. So I've been married 3.5 times. Whew. So anyway, but do you know one thing? You reap what you sow, and you will get your turn. No doubt about it. Karma is not a candy. And so as life would have it, you know, we tried to work it out. It didn't work. She actually came to me after we separated, said she was pregnant, and she had a son by me. My son is here this weekend. I love him to death. And we got back together and we worked as long as we could, and it was good. We got a house, all the wrappings and all that, and most people know. But then, out of nowhere, everything was all right. But basically, I mean, I'm a cheat, first of all. Let me say that. I cheat. And it's in my nature. I'm working on it. But I will cheat. And so she decided to have a relationship with another woman, a woman in a program that I knew. And that was kind of like, damn. So, but that's how my high power deals with me. He see, because most stuff I can shake off. I will brush some shit off, okay? Most stuff to devastate, rock other people, don't even faze me. But that thing right there, that's what made me stand up to attention, okay? And it ain't just the fact of it happening. See, what you got to recognize is it ain't what happens to you. It's the frequency that you have to face what happened to you. When you got to walk around and see it, especially in a place that's why I really try to stay out of relationships and rules of Narcotics Anonymous, because I live here. This is where I got to come. I don't care what happened. You understand? So I had to show up. If you ain't never had to do that, I'm going to advise you not to do nothing stupid and crazy like I did. But I know you ain't going to listen, so go ahead and do what you do. Go ahead and do what you do, because you'll get what you get, and hopefully you got a strong enough foundation. At the end of the day, you'll be able to deal with life on life's terms. Because life don't come shaded. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? And I had to stand up and be a man. And just so, but I ain't learned. I did not learn. So, you know, what I do is, because let me just say this. I heard the phrase, ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun. When it's your turn, it ain't no fun. So, but I survived it. I survived it, and then not only did she do that, she left me with my son, who was about 6 years old, and she left me with her daughter from the other guy that was in prison. She was 9. So now, not only did I embrace that, I embraced them. So I embraced all of my pain and my love and my joy and everything that I had, my recovery, and I persevered, okay? So we're going to fast forward a couple years, and things going good, you know. I'm doing my thing, everything. Things is going well. I'm successful at work and take care of my kids. And so I'm thinking that, you know, I need a woman now. So I pick up one. I select one. And because I picked up plenty on the way, I selected one, and, you know, God fixed me right up, too, boy. She was willing. And I like that, just willingness. That'll get you a long way right there. Honest, open, and willingness helps. But I ain't one caring about the other part. The willingness was key. She had one of the elements. Anyway, it's come to an end. And anyway, I married her. And subsequently, you know, of course, she probably knew my story. So when we got mad, she did the same thing that happened to me before. She went with a girl in the program. You know, them goddamn girls in the program starting to get on my goddamn nerves. I mean, I can't swallow her so much. I just missed a double homicide on the first bit. So, you know, I had to put away all my black gear. You know, that spiritual shit going a little too far here. So they're trying all of the threads of my character is being tested now. Now, the spiritual warfare has went way beyond reasonable accommodation. You know what I mean? And again, pickup. I never had a pickup. Whew. but again, I had to come. I got 17 years clean. Shit. I got to show up at this. It ain't no turning around. Fuck, I'ma go. But I mean, I'm just sharing because I can't share good stuff. I can only share with you most of the bad stuff. I share with you my pain. Because that's what made me grow. I can share because I got a lot of good stuff. I got a lot of good stuff. I'm a good dude, for real. That's just one area that I've been messed up in all my life. I ain't just getting messed up. I was paying a quarter for, what's a good word for it? Sex? Okay. I grew up, my sisters had a crew, you know, a quarter gets you a hit. I was seven, so I grew up with pimps and hoes. So, you know, I'm a little, got a little hoe in me, what? So, but it's getting better. It's getting better. But let me just share this before I close. So anyway, we went past that. My wife moved back in, you know, left that situation, moved back in. I accepted her back. You know, we went through that a couple times. You know, right now, I just got divorced on March the 27th, recently. This year has been a hell of a year. And just got divorced, and she still lives in the same house with me. And she says she ain't leaving till July, and I'm all, I'm all right with that. I'd rather her leave right away, but she can't. So I have to accept that, and I'm trying to teach her how to be cordial, teach her how to be accepting. But she hit me with, baby, you know, I love you, I don't want to leave, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to make it all up, and just tell you how my heart is, I'll be ready to forgive her. Same thing, but different results. So, but I'm telling you, the disease is tricky. Life on life's terms isn't about what everybody thinks, because I told you, I really don't care. I will take her back if I ain't careful. Even with all that, because I like people that's messed up. I'm more comfortable. Because I can get some people that ain't messed up. I don't really like them that much. If you ain't messed up a little like me, I don't want to do with you. You nice and everything, but what? The sex is just better when you all messed up. So, I mean, that's just where it is. You know what I'm saying? Bottom line is, I know we're in two different places. You know what I'm saying? That's the reality. We're in two different places. But once I had accepted her, it's hard to push her away now. So I'm working through it daily. I mean, I just got finished talking to her this morning. She's trying to feed me why, you know, and convince me. And, I'm trying to hold fast. My sponsor working with me. Everybody trying to help me. My mother said, you better not do that, boy. You know, but at the end of the day, my heart moves me most of the time. I don't really operate off a lot. I operate off my heart most of the time, and y'all gave me that. And I really happy about it on most days, but some days I really don't like that, man. Yeah, it got me open, and that thing is, it creates pain. If I don't stay with her, I'm going to marry somebody else. Shit. I'm not going to be alone. So those people that preach that, keep on doing what you do. That ain't for me. That's not going to happen. You know what I mean? But the good news, man, recovery is wonderful. I deal with whatever it is, whatever. There is no excuse to use. And most people, if not walked into a room, have to face most stuff I face. But you know what? I face it with my head up. I'm proud of being me. I'm proud of being clean. I'm proud of being a recovering addict. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not ashamed of anything I've done or anything that someone's done to me. So I'm trying to accept the people for what they've done and forgive them and not hold resentments. You know what I'm saying? So they give me a lot of practice. I give myself practice because I make mistakes. And that's what I share with y'all, my mistakes. But trust me, I got a lot of other stuff that I don't make mistakes in. So, but bottom line is, I hope that what I said can help somebody. If you're struggling, talk about it. I share. Most people say I shouldn't share. I share whatever. I don't know what I'm going to say. I know what I was going to say when I got up here. Bottom line is, I share whatever's going on that day. Just for the day. That's what it is. Thank you.
Thank you all these folks right now for hope. Again, my name is Kim and I'm an addict. And I've been asked to advise you that if you are illegally parked, they are ticketing and towing. So please move your car. At this time, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, a gentleman by the name of Farrakhan.
My name is Farrakhan, I'm an addict.
Hey,
I want to thank God for being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and to be away in recovery. And I truly thank him for this moment in time, for without his grace, his unmerited favor, a guy like me will be standing here trying to share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I want to first thank the Ocean City Convention area for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank my wife that traveled with me, my sponsor and his wife that traveled with me. And above all, as always, I want to thank God for blessing me with another day. And I'm going to get to that because once you understand about life on life terms for me, I'll really be selfish not to thank him. Because, see, listen, you know, first I want to get this out of the way, right? You know, like in New York, right, we got some stuff we, you know, we have a radio broadcast, you know, like a radio station, and every morning they, like, send out jokes to people. Like, they crank them. They call it crank them. Yeah. I don't know if y'all got that up here. But it's called crank. You know, you call somebody up, and you put somebody on the phone, and they act like they're somebody else. Well, listen, for the last 3 weeks, no, for the last couple, no, no, for the last week, I could say, for some reason, I've been calling people up, and I've been cranking them, and I ain't been telling them the end of the crank. You know, I just call somebody, I look at my phone book, and I say, I'm going to call Zadigo. This is what I do. Sometimes, listen, I'm going to show you how crazy I can be sometimes. Hey, this is Billy Mack talking. Listen. You Thomas B., listen, I'm going to tell you right now. You will feel committed for me. Now, listen, I just said his name, but that ain't who I call. But I'm saying that's some of the shit that I do. You know, because I was so nervous about coming here, and sometimes I got to find some shit to get me a little sensitive. Right. So sometimes people around me don't know what I'm doing sometimes, but I know what the hell I be doing. You know? But now back to Life on Life Church, because let me tell you something. See, when they gave me this topic, right, or gave us this topic, you know, I don't dwell on too many topics. I allow God, like the brother said, to give me something, and I work from there. But I'm really finding out clearly that my life has always made me able to talk about any topic that they give me, no matter what topic that it might be. Because talking about life on life's term, it's hard for a guy coming up like I came up off welfare. You know what I'm saying? Living in a four-room apartment with one single parent and four of those rooms are closed down. You know, eating Spam in the can, you know what I'm saying? Eating that yellow grits. You know, eating that thick peanut butter that at that time would tear a piece of bread up. You know? So, I mean, it was easy for me not to want to live life on life's terms. Very easy. I mean, I came up with a pair of Brogan shoes. I couldn't get no Converses. And Converses at that time cost $8.99. Moms couldn't give me none. And see, one thing about children, when they're small and you don't have what they have a way of letting you know. So back in the day, if you didn't have no Converses, they just didn't tell you about your Converses. They sang a song to you. You know? And the song kind of went like this. If your sneakers slip and slide, get them on the star side. You know? So, I mean, you know? So, right away, I know I was messed up. Because I couldn't get no Converses. I couldn't buy no Pro-Cats. You know, I didn't know anything about living life on life's terms, meaning have some kind of acceptance. Right away, you know, I start reacting rather than responding. You know, I start doing those things to make me noticeable. I start doing those things to make me be more appreciative. Or either to make people appreciate me more. Because I always tried to hide from who I was. You know, see, being born, when I was born, it wasn't saying, singing loud, I'm black and I'm proud. You know, so I had to live right away with a stigma. I didn't know how to live life on life terms. I didn't want to live life on life terms. I wanted to hide from who I was. You know, and in hiding from who I was, I became everybody else but myself. So when I was coming up, you know, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers was out. So I liked Frankie Lyman. I liked the doo-wop guy. It went on, so all of a sudden you heard about Motown, so I wanted to be a lead singer of the Temptations. You know, that crazy stuff. But at the end of my addiction, I was like, Marvin Gaye, what the hell's going on? That's how messed up I was at the end. So it was hard for me to talk about life on life terms. And so for 27 years after I met the drug, you know what I'm saying? Because when I first picked up a bag of dope, it was like $2 a bag, and it was called a skag then. You know, and I was getting it from 116th Street by a guy by the name of Goldfinger. You know, and, you know, the number one car at that time was a Cadillac. You know, if you had a Riviera or a Bonneville, you was doing kind of good. Number one watch at that time was a Long Jean, a Boulevard Omega. You know, I came up out of Brooklyn, so I got my clothes made on Merle Avenue and Hart Street. You know what I'm saying? I went down and got the material of Nancy and Orchard. You know, I wore Playboys, Dots, Alligators, you know what I'm saying? Blashout sweaters, quarter factor scooters, Saratogas, Dots. You know, anybody know what I'm talking about, know what I'm talking about. Because see, dope fiends back then was fly. You crackheads fucked the game up. You know, fucked the game up. You know? You understand? I don't mean no harm, but y'all took the game to another level. You know, y'all took it somewhere where I don't understand. You know? Because see, not glamorizing nothing, but I got literature that tells me that we don't try to separate, we try to identify. You understand? But the shit that crackheads did, I couldn't really identify. But at the end of my addiction, not only did I identify, I was worse than the crackheads that I was talking about. Well, let's get real about that part. But I'm saying for 27 years, I shot and I sniffed heroin. I was able to go to the movie, though I was nodding, I was in the movie. I was able to go downtown to Junior's and get me a meal. Sometime I would pay for the meal, sometime I wouldn't. Because in Junior's, you go upstairs to the bathroom and come back downstairs and walk right out the door. So a lot of time with a pocket full of money, I walked out the door. Because see, dope things had money. You know, we kept a little chain up, you know what I'm saying? We kept money. You know, we kept our hair kind of like groomed. You know what I'm saying? We bought us a Blashout sweater when we went to COCP or the Dome or Man Center. You know what I'm saying? So we had to lose something about us. So we had to, you had to be really messed up to be recognized as a dope fiend, because dope fiend was clean. That's the bottom line. They was flying, they was clean. But it's something about crack. See, crack let me know, in case I didn't know I had a problem. Because 27 years I ran with heroin. And like I said, I did a lot of stuff running with that. But at the end, for 27 years, I was able to go to Junior's. I was able to buy me a meal. I was able to like look kind of half-ass fly. But boy, when I put that crack up, them gaiters I used to wear, they became foot foolers. Yeah, I'm serious. Shoe at the top and no shoe at the bottom. I mean, those tailor-made pants that I got made, at the end, my pants were so short that my socks caught a fire. Pants never know. That's at the end of it. You know what I'm saying? So I was messed up. Because crack took me places where Star Trek never went. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I smoked crack, I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk. I would see her pick my shit up, and I couldn't talk. I couldn't ask where my shit's at. Put it back. I had the point. I wanted to say where my shit's at, but I couldn't get out. I mean, I was messed up. You talking about living life on life terms. Man, listen, I'm so glad for Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know what to sing a tap dance. You know, because at the end of my addiction, I was so messed up. Let me tell you something. At the end of my addiction, I ate so many little Debbies. If I see her, I'll kick in the ass like a football. That's me, little Debbie's age. I don't never want to forget where I came from. I know what the literature says. It says we shouldn't dwell too extensively on the using. I'm going to tell you something. If you use the way I use, and you became an auto mechanic without working on a car, that's how greasy I was. I'm going to forget that. Listen, the shine you see now, I didn't come in looking like this 14 and a half years ago. I was messed up. But I came in here and I got some new information. I was able to come in here and receive a sponsor and allow him to sponsor me. I'm talking about I was able to get some new information because I heard in our literature that what I thought I knew about life almost killed me. I didn't understand that all the slick stuff that I did, all the hustling, all the pimping, all the jail-trapping, all the things that I did, at the end of all of that, I couldn't have went nowhere else to give me a check, a pension check for pimping. You don't get pension checks for pimping. You don't get no SSI check for hustling. You don't get none of that kind of stuff. You understand? So now, if I can run for my disease for 30 years the way I ran, Then I came inside here, and they begin to tell me, listen, Farrakhan, if you want your life to change, guess what? There's some things that you got to start doing now. You would have to start living life, brother, on life's terms. You got to stop trying to find easy and quicker ways to get out. Because I got a disease that sometimes I tell a lie on it. I'll do something to tell you it's my disease made me do. Instead of saying that's what I wanted to do. So a lot of times the cop out for me is my disease made me do this. A lot of times I want to show my ass. A lot of times I want to do some stuff to make me feel uncomfortable after I do it. But while I'm doing it, I feel real comfortable doing it. But see, when you stay here, Farrakhan, and you work on some principles, and you get some steps in your life, and you allow people to sponsor you, what you do yesterday that felt good won't feel good today. You'll start changing your, listen, you start changing the way you think, your perception, your conceptual view will broaden. You'll start looking at somebody else's opinion rather than your own. So I began to come in here. Didn't have nothing at the end of my addiction. You know what I'm saying? Didn't have nothing. I was living in a shelter. And I came in and this magnificent, fantastic, marvelous program called Narcotics Anonymous embraced me. God had already prepared some of y'all to receive me before I got here. Don't ever think that the people that help you, God has not positioned them to receive you. But I had to get off my ego trip, get out of my self-centeredness, and start understanding, Farrakhan, you ain't got no juice. So when I did this first step, understand, you ain't got no juice, buddy. You better let somebody juice you up. Because you ain't got none. So I was able to hear some stuff. Like get some numbers. Like get your home group. You know what I'm saying? That come to meetings. Talk about how you feel. Share what you need to share. But listen, when I came around, they told me, listen, everything you share, brother, ain't with, is not share material. You better get a sponsor, somebody, and bounce off on them first. And that's what I did. And because I did that, my life began to change. I began to feel better about myself. I woke up one day, and the compulsion and the obsession to use was lifted. I woke up one day, and I saw a little glow that I had as a little boy at 8 years old coming back into play. I saw my teeth turn from yellow to white again. You know what I'm saying? I saw my eyes turn from bloodshot red to white again. So there was a transformation taking place in my life. Because there's something about this program, the longer you come here, listen, the older you look, the longer you come here and the older you get, this program makes you look younger. That's how powerful the program is. So I came here and I began to get information. And I started saying, look, sir, perhaps this can work for me. Let me allow somebody to re-educate me. You know what I'm saying? Let me take my thinking that I thought I had that was so solid and it was so down because I got out of situations that I thought I got out of. Didn't know that God was guiding me out of those situations to bring me here. To use us as an instrument and a vessel to carry this message. Didn't have a clue about that. Thought it was all about me. They came to kill me and now here I am because I wrapped my way out of it. I'm getting tight. See, I took the credit right away from the guy who gave it to me, God. Took the credit right away from him. So I kept coming. And he told me, he said, one day you're going to come inside here and situations is going to come into your life. So if you don't have a strong foundation to stand on, you might use. So I came in here and I began to correspond with my sponsor. I began to get a network. I began to talk to men and women. And they began to help me. And so in 1992, when I came, in 93, I was here for a year and I found that I was HIV positive. If I had not heard some men and some women share that they was positive too, could I have stayed? You know what I'm saying? When I came here, my brother died. You know what I'm saying? But let me get back to this part here. In 92, when I came here, and then a year later, I found out I had the virus. Okay, I had some people who had showed me that they had the virus too, but they was living with it clean. They was not using. You know what I'm saying? So they instilled in me the courage that I didn't have. You know what I'm saying? So a year had passed. Got sick. Went to the hospital, stayed there for almost 3.5 months, went down to 50 pounds. Doctor came into the hospital. Listen, we're talking about life on life terms. You can't identify with life on life terms unless you go through something life on life terms. You got to find something to connect that with to show others. And guess what? If he can do it for me, he can do it for you too. What makes you think he just got juice for me and ain't got no juice for you? So guess what? I went down to 50 pounds today, and the doctors would come in, and they would look at me. And for 3 solid months, I would All I would do is eat food and regurgitate it back up. For 3 solid months straight, all I would do is have the hiccups, back pains. You know what I'm saying? For 3 months straight. And the doctors came in and he looked at me and he said, listen, he ain't gonna make it. He ain't gonna make it. You know, he ain't got no chance of getting through this one. But see, one thing about me and us, because we're more alike than unlike, we only see what's in front of us. God sees what's ahead of us. You know what I'm saying? So we only get what we see in front of us, and we'll take that and we'll latch on to that and hold on to that. But see, you don't know what your higher power got in store for you. If he have brought you here, trust me, there's something marvelous for us to do. So now I can't. So listen. So he said, listen, bring the family together. He ain't gonna make it. Nah, no way. Nah, he ain't gonna. Nah. You might as well listen. Your mom make arrangements. We talking about 1994. He said that. Here it is, 2007. He might be dead. You know what I'm saying? The doctors have said that might be dead. You don't know what God got in store for you, Farrakhan, but if you say that you believe in me, you said you have done some step work, you shared real good on the third step one time, so I'm going to try you on the third step. I'm going to see that you make a decision to turn your life and your will over to me. Because I'm going to bring you so low, because guess what? Anytime you put somebody before me, I'm going to show you who the boss is. Anytime you put a woman, a man, money, anything before me, I'm going to show you something. Because I see you saying something that you don't believe. So I'm going to put you in a fetal position. I'm going to bring you so low down that only people are going to say, well, my God, that's right. It took a mighty God to bring him back. Real simple. This is not a religious program, but guess what? You can't do steps without having God in them. You cannot do proper step work without having God in it. Let's get that straight. Let's get that real straight. You know what I'm saying? Now, check this out. After being here, he brought me back. They said he was going to never come back. Friends in the fellowship, they started making arrangements and started saying to themselves, well, you know, he was a good guy, and, you know, he was all right, and he ain't going, well, he was all right. And they was amazed when I came to my first meeting in a wheelchair. Came back within a few weeks in a walker. Came back in a few weeks in a cane. Came back, and guess what? 7 months, God put me back walking independent.
Yes.
And from that time in 1997, guess what he did? He started allowing me to start sharing my experience with an hope.
All right.
See, I believe that anytime we do something that affects us, it's not so much affecting us only. We are examples for somebody else. See, you ain't that jazzed up, Farrakhan, you should think about it, you. So he began to give me some stuff. Okay, now I got some stuff. You know, I'm speaking at conventions. You know, I think I'm living life on life terms because I'm on SSI. You know, I'm getting $560 a month. I'm on a fixed income. That means it's fixed. It don't change. So I'm thinking I'm doing all right. I don't want to go nowhere. I'm living in, you know, I'm going to conventions. I'm speaking here and there. They asked me to come. So I'm doing my thing. I'm satisfied. Then my brother died. April 28th, 2000, my brother died. I see him. He takes his last breath. I'm standing there. You know, holes in my chest. Holes in my heart. You know, don't know what to do. But I'm going to tell you how God works in my life. The moment my brother died, the same day, April 28th, I met my wife. I'm talking about, you don't know what God's going to do for you. All you got to do, Farrakhan, is stay in position. Because I was running around all over the place, you know, and I'm hitting this one, hitting that one. I'm telling a whole bunch of lies that we're going to get married, and I'm going to take you someplace where I know damn well I ain't ready to go. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to get over. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to find some fulfillment. You know what I'm saying? And I'm playing past the blessings. Because if I thought that God had lift me up to do that and to then to take that and then, as an example, abuse it the way I was abusing it, so he had to get my attention again. So he got my attention. Brother died, met my wife. We've been together from that day to this day, married. But guess what? Got hurt. Didn't know how to lose. Listen, still didn't know how to live life on life terms. Still out there abortion. Bring her to convention, hiding out. You know what I'm saying? Ain't doing nothing, but still seeing if I got the game to do something. I'm talking shit everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And she told me one day, so let me tell you something. She said, I don't care what you do, but you better make me number one. Okay, what you do, you better make me number one. You know good at it. I hear you. Didn't do that. She kept on warning me. Still didn't listen. Nah. Still doing my thing. Because I'm thinking, because I'm not doing nothing physically with anybody. But I'm just, see how game tight I am. I'm still playing games. I went home. I turned the key. I went inside the apartment, and guess what? She was gone as though she never was there. She didn't leave nothing to remember her by. You talking about living life on life terms? I was fucked up. Listen, when my friends came to get me, I had my kufi on like this. My robe was on like this. I was fucked up. Yeah, I was messed up. You know what I'm saying? Because I was playing games. And she told me. But I'm going to tell you something, though. Listen, but I'm going to tell you something. Being I'd done a little bit of step work at that time. Just a little bit. I knew enough to know that if I allowed her to get away, I allowed the most precious gift in my life to get away. And for 7 months, she stayed away from me. But for 7 months, I was on the phone every day begging. I ain't gonna lie, I begged my wife back to me. I don't care nobody. I ain't got no image, no nothing. I begged my wife back to me. If she leaves again tomorrow, I'll beg her again. See, I ain't got no image. Because I don't know about you. Have you ever loved somebody and woke up and it wasn't there? Only that though, that empty, have you ever got an empty feeling, a cold empty feeling? Like your spirit is gone? I mean, my spirit was gone. I mean, my spirit was gone, and all I could do was cry. Couldn't let y'all see me cry. Oh, hell no. But I cried. I cried, and I begged my wife back. And she came back. You know what I'm saying? And when she came back, I started realizing the value of what I had. So she started telling me stuff like this. You speak it everywhere. People saying that you're helping them. When are you going to start helping yourself? So, because for 10 years I was going to trainings, you know, and for 10 years being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, never worked. Not saying I'm nothing slick, that's just my story, never worked. But for 10 years I came into the rooms, I didn't do anything illegal, but I didn't work. I was satisfied just getting a little bit of money. But I had a woman in my life now who I said I cared about, and because of what I believe in, I believe as a man, I'm supposed to step up to the plate. So I begin to change. You understand? And because she helped me change, and I didn't want to lose her, and I started looking at my friends and their wives and how their wives was having this and having that. I said, let me see what I can do. And so I started looking for a job. The job didn't come to me. There was no, y'all came to me. Another addict said, listen, send me your resume. What resume? I ain't never worked in my life. What resume? I ain't tell her that. I'm saying a resume, but I called some people up. I called y'all up. It might not be you per se, but I called an addict up. And they made me a resume. And I was able to take that resume and give it to this other addict who told me at the time, B, you don't have a job. Are you willing to do security work? Listen, I was willing to to work in Key Foods, the A&P, hold the door open. Because I wanted to give my wife something more than what I was giving her. Because my wife took care of me for 3 years of the marriage. She took care of me. I'm gonna digress a little bit. Don't you know, brothers, that when a woman take care of you, you start, and you don't try to change, she start to lose the respect for you. Her love for you start to diminish. Because she married a man, not a boy. Do I got it? Can I get it? Can you help me? She don't want that. She don't want that. You know, so if I step on some toes, move your feet, might be too big. You know what I'm saying? So I understand clearly that my woman, that my wife began to help me become a better person. You know what I'm saying? So I got a job. You know what I'm saying? I was able, first after the lady saw my resume, she looked at it. She said, well, okay. Then she called me back and said, listen, because of all the trainings you got, I'm going to add on another position. And the moment I got the job, I went from saying, getting $5,000 a year of SSI, automatically I got over $25,000 raise the moment I got that first job. Been working for 4 years. My wife is here to my life on life terms. My wife is here. I have yet to miss any of my obligations as far as paying bills, paying the rent, doing what I'm supposed to do with her. Listen, she comes first. We talk about life on life terms. You know what I'm saying? I said that time? Okay. Are we over? Oh, okay, I thought so. So, she says she's a newcomer, though, I understand. Yeah, I know. But listen, but I'm saying that to say right here, though. I'm saying that, see, I didn't see the value in me until my wife began to point the value that she saw in me. And I began to do some stuff. And I've been on this job for 4 years. Like I said, many times have I missed my obligations. I have not been the perfect husband, because I'm trying to live life on life terms, and live life on life terms, being a husband means sometimes it don't come to instructions, sometimes I come up short. But I know one thing, through this program, I have stepped up to the plate. Now, before I close, I got 8 more minutes. I got 15 children. Wow. 14 of them is living, one of them passed away. I got 27 grandchildren. She has 5 children of her own. So her children, I call my children. And I have to say this, and a lot of times, sometimes her children hurt her, and it makes me want to pull back. Because her children is there more than mine is, and her children don't see the value that they have in their mother's eyes. They don't see the love that she wants to give them. Because they still, I'm telling you some women, don't allow your children to hold you captive on the past. Don't allow them to keep beating you up about what you didn't do. They say that you're not responsible for your disease, you're responsible for your recovery. You done changed, you ain't the same person. So you know, so don't let them beat you up. So they take that, and sometimes they use that against her. Like yesterday, for instance, I have to say this. Because I'm sharing, she's not, I have to say this. You understand? When our son came home, we welcomed him into our house. We took care most of the responsibilities. All we told him to do is get a job. He got a job. The job didn't work out. Okay. That's okay. Things happen. I understand. But now, all of a sudden now, because you got a cell phone bill that costs over $300-some that she helped you get, and she tells you that she had to cut it off because it's too much for her to handle, you see her yesterday and walk past her like she ain't never done nothing for you. Now that affected her, because I see how she responded in the car. So now it bothered me, because here's the guy was, I'm giving you my money, you eat my food, we looking out for you, and all of a sudden something to work out that you like, you don't see us no more? You walk past us? Matter of fact, he didn't even speak to me yesterday. Now you think that didn't affect me? But I always tell her, I said, baby, it's me and you. To the hard way, fuck him. Fuck him. Fuck him. Because you're going to tell you something. Those your kids. I don't owe them shit. And when you look at it, you don't owe nothing no more either. Because for 10 years almost, she's been there for them. And all of a sudden now, you're going to treat her like that? And only come back when things are good, when you think things are good? So Ben, I got to live life on life terms. He got to live life on life terms. It ain't gonna live there, but guess what? We're changing the locks. It ain't fuck that. We're changing the locks. No, he listen. Hockey player, get the puck out of here. Go ahead. Go about your business. Go ahead. I ain't got time for that. Let me tell you something. I don't disrespect my wife. I don't make her cry. So I'm not gonna lie, near person in her life or my life to make her cry. My name is Farrakhan. Thank you for allowing me to share.